Welcome to the Market Close Briefing. I'm Mia.
And I'm Milo. It was a day where one thread ran through almost everything. Geopolitical risk turning into actual price action. Oil nearly touched $100, stocks slid, and yields got everyone talking. So let's walk through the closing tape, the catalysts behind it, and what to watch from here.
Let's start with the biggest mover, oil. Brent crude hit $98 a barrel on Tuesday after Iran's Houthi allies attacked multiple Saudi energy facilities. The Houthis claimed strikes with ballistic missiles and drones on Saudi Aramco facilities in Aba, Najran, and Jazan. There were fires at several locations, and the Saudi Energy Ministry said efforts were ongoing to contain the blazes, though they didn't name the facilities.
And Saudi Arabia responded by halting several energy facilities in the south. That's the part that matters for the oil market. The targets appear to include infrastructure that supplies local Saudi demand, but the repeated attacks on Jazan are the concern. That's where a major refinery is located. If Jazan keeps getting hit, that's a persistent risk to supply.
Meanwhile, on the equity side, stocks slid at the close as U.S.-Iran tensions pushed oil toward $99. Bloomberg's cross-platform coverage with Romain Bostic, Carol Masser, and Tim Stjernovac captured the tape. This was a broad risk-off session, and oil was the transmission channel.
The United States and Iran traded strikes over the weekend, and that's what set this week in motion. On the sanctions front, the U.S. targeted all Iranian airlines that weren't already sanctioned under what's being called Operation Economic Outcast, dozens of firms supporting Iran's aviation sector. Worth noting, that effort hasn't yet appeared to have much impact on Tehran's main trading partners.
There's also a diplomatic ripple. Iran's foreign ministry took aim at Canada for supporting U.S. actions in the Strait of Hormuz. Canada had condemned Iran's destabilizing actions and said it would work with partners to maintain pressure. So the squeeze attempt continues, but the measurable market impact so far is oil near 100 and equities lower.
One partial relief valve. China shipped out its first sulfuric acid cargo since halting exports in May. That offers some relief to copper producers who've been squeezed by a global shortage after the Iran war choked off Middle East supplies. It's a small thing, but it shows how the conflict has been snarling supply chains well beyond crude.
What to watch? Whether the Houthi attacks on Jazan repeat, and whether Brent decisively breaks that $100 level. Saudi Arabia's ability to contain the fires at the southern facilities is the immediate variable.
From oil to bonds, because yields were moving too. And stocks fell Tuesday as oil prices and treasury yields rose together. That combination is exactly why the bond market has everyone on edge. On the Big Take podcast, Bloomberg's John Authors joined guest host Stacey Vanek Smith to talk through whether the current action is a correction or a crisis.
Their argument, and this is interpretation, not a reported fact, is that surging bond yields may not be a crisis. They frame it with some colorful references, pythons and pigs, and the economist Schumpeter. The core idea they're exploring is whether this is a normal repricing rather than something systemic breaking.
One supporting data point, the traditional post-Labor Day rush to sell U.S. dollar high-grade debt got off to a slower start this year. Fresh market volatility kept some borrowers on the sidelines. So the volatility is real enough that issuers are stepping back from the new issue market.
And it connects directly to policy. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent is set to reveal how far he's initially willing to go to restrain U.S. bond yields through an expanded buyback program. And Wall Street dealers are on edge about it. That's the same dynamic Authors and Vanek Smith are discussing. Yields surging, and the Treasury preparing to intervene in the market to manage them.
What's unknown here is the scale. Bessent hasn't revealed the initial scope yet, so dealers don't know how much supply the Treasury is prepared to absorb. That reveal is the thing to watch.
Abroad, sovereign debt stress is showing up differently. Senegal will seek to negotiate a debt reprofiling, not a restructuring, in talks with creditors. The West African nation wants to make its loans sustainable so it can qualify for an International Monetary Fund program. Reprofiling versus restructuring is a meaningful distinction, stretching maturities rather than taking losses on principal.
From treasury policy to trade policy, because tariffs were back in the picture. America's top retailers and manufacturers are getting long-awaited relief from President Trump's sweeping global tariffs. Think Nike, think Starbucks. But here's the catch from the reporting. For some of the hardest-hit companies, the share price benefits pale in comparison with the massive losses they suffered on Liberation Day. So relief, yes, but recovery of the full drawdown? Not yet.
And the trade war isn't de-escalating everywhere. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney said he doesn't believe in escalating the conflict with the U.S., but argued counter-tariffs are necessary to cushion the blow for Canadian businesses and workers. Canadian retaliatory tariffs were set to take effect Tuesday on $20 billion of U.S. goods.
And on the eve of that, Trump said the aerospace giant Bombardier must build in America. Bombardier's response was to point out its U.S. footprint. The company does have significant American operations. So there's a public argument over what counts as American manufacturing, and Canadian counter-tariffs are now live.
Tariffs also cut into pharma and food, two consumer-facing pressure points. First, pharma. Sandoz CEO Richard Saynor warned that steep U.S. tariffs on imported generic drugs could force manufacturers to raise prices or cut supply. His line was blunt. Patients pay the tariff. Generics are a thin-margin business, so the pass-through question is real.
Second, food. General Mills, Mars, and McKee Foods joined a growing list of food manufacturers and grocers in antitrust litigation, alleging that top U.S. sugar producers colluded to inflate prices for the sweetener used in many of the snacks and drinks Americans consume every day. If those allegations hold up, it's an input cost story for an entire sector. But that's an allegation at this stage. Nothing proven.
Both of those are stories where the market transmission is potential rather than observed. But the pass-through to consumer prices is the thing to monitor in both cases.
Now to the stock movers, where pharma dominated the tape. Novartis shares tanked 10% on Tuesday. That's the magnitude, after three clinical trial setbacks in a single week. The latest, a treatment for a rare muscle-wasting disease, failed a late-stage study. And the Deldaciron drug trial results disappointed investors. Three failures in a week is an unusual cluster, and the market repriced it accordingly.
The other big downside mover, Boston Scientific. The medical devices company said fallout from a cybersecurity incident has impacted its ability to ship products to customers, and it will miss its sales growth and earnings estimates for the year. That's a guidance change, the clearest one on the day, and it's operational, not demand-driven. Shipment disruption rather than lost appetite for the products.
The bright spot in the sector, AstraZeneca's COPD drug scored two late-stage trial wins. The full data reinforces hopes it could be a breakthrough COPD treatment and reach the company's peak annual sales forecast of more than $5 billion. So within pharma in a single session, a 10% drawdown at Novartis, a guidance cut at Boston Scientific, and a pipeline win at AstraZeneca. Very stock-specific dispersion.
Let's turn to AI and chips, which had their own momentum story. Jim Cramer flagged NVIDIA and Broadcom as big winners from OpenAI's new Astra model release, each benefiting in their own ways. The Astra model generated a lot of buzz Tuesday.
Intel shares were up almost 5% pre-market, rising on a report the company could raise computer chip prices next month. That's a pricing power story, and it kept Intel higher.
There's also a notable capital structure move. Qualcomm issued warrants to Amazon to acquire $4 billion worth of Qualcomm stock as part of an AI infrastructure deal. Context matters here. Qualcomm is trying to move into the data center business, where NVIDIA has been the dominant player in the AI boom. Issuing equity-linked paper to secure an AI partnership tells you something about how competitive that land grab is.
But not everything in AI infrastructure is going smoothly. Alphabet and Blackstone's new cloud venture has hit delays at major data center locations that were supposed to run Google's chips. The reporting frames that as underscoring the obstacles standing in the way of big tech's AI ambitions. So, demand is roaring, but the physical build-out has friction.
There's a regulatory angle, too, though this one is about tech more broadly than AI specifically. Australia plans to give social media users the option to switch off algorithm-based feeds in proposed legislation, the latest blow to tech giants. That's proposed legislation, not law yet.
On the chip stock tape itself, Taiwan Semiconductor rose above an early buy point as chip stocks rallied. The ADR cleared a 50-day moving average and an early entry point, with a cup base and a higher buy point further up. That's technical framing from Investor's Business Daily, so take it as chart analysis rather than fundamental news. And on the data center theme, trader Mike Koo pointed to Vertibip, up over 1,000%, 1,043% over 5 years, and sees more gains, while acknowledging profit-taking would be understandable after a run like that.
Let's cross the Pacific to India, which had its own market moment. The National Stock Exchange of India is likely to price its long-awaited IPO at 1,700 to 1,785 rupees a share. That's below the earlier marketed range of 2,000 to 2,100, a meaningful discount to what was originally floated.
And the backdrop matters. Prime Minister Narendra Modi, speaking after inaugurating the Global FinTech Fest, said India's strong growth gives confidence to the world and that reforms will continue. So you have the country's flagship exchange listing at a discount to its marketed range, with the government simultaneously projecting confidence in the growth story.
What's still unknown is the final pricing and how the offering is received. The range is what people familiar with the matter indicated, not a done deal.
From India to geopolitics, and this is a slower-moving story, but an important one. Kyiv's allies see the war in Ukraine going into 2027, possibly longer. Melinda Herring, a non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, said the war shows no signs of slowing and could drag on another 3 to 4 years.
Her read on Putin's strategy, and again, this is her interpretation, is that he's hoping to run out the clock on Ukraine by getting into complicated negotiations and undermining the idea of any Ukrainian sovereignty. So the negotiating process itself may be the weapon.
Separately, the UK announced new sanctions targeting Israeli settlements in the West Bank, despite US warnings of economic consequences if it moved ahead. The UK did it anyway. That's a fresh point of friction between Washington and London, though no market transmission was reported.
Now to credit and deal-making, where the picture is mixed. The cautionary tale, Australia's Bathla Group. The home builder tumbled into insolvency, and last Thursday, more than a week after the collapse, a 24-hour deadline to secure emergency funding came and went, putting the company on the verge of liquidation. The reporting notes lender chaos is hampering the hunt for cash. When a borrower's lenders can't coordinate, the end game gets messy fast.
On the healthier side of the ledger, Cerberus Capital Management sold a net lease real estate business it founded 5 years ago, Tenet, for $1.6 billion. They capitalized on demand for a type of property transaction that's gaining popularity. 5 year hold. 1.6 billion exit. That's the private market cycle working as designed.
And in the leveraged finance market, companies are flocking to the US loan market, both to reprice large chunks of existing debt and to fund deals, with a pickup in leveraged buyout financing adding to the rush. So despite bond market jitters, the loan market is crowded. Borrowers are moving where pricing works.
And in hedge funds, Millennium Management's assets hit $97 billion, more than double what the firm oversaw 6 years ago, and it's speeding toward the $100 billion mark. The giant multi-strategy funds are entering a new era of scale.
Now for a sector that's colliding with finance in interesting ways. Private credit. Peter Hughes, CEO of Apex Group, made the case on Bloomberg Open Interest that family offices need better access to quality private market deals. His bigger argument is that regulated tokenization could transform private credit, bringing 24/7 access, secondary market liquidity, and potentially an end to the traditional 7 to 10 year lockups.
That last point is the big one. The lockup is a defining feature of private credit. If tokenization genuinely erodes it, the asset class starts looking more like public markets. Whether regulators allow that at scale is the open question.
From tokenization to actual cash moving in the shadows. On Odd Lots, journalist Oliver Bulla joined Tracy Alawe and Joe Weisenthar for two related conversations: how Mexican cartels use heavy farm equipment to launder money, and why criminal enterprises love $100 bills.
The framing there is striking. Money laundering today resembles Renaissance-era banking. Criminals are always looking for creative ways to move cash, and the everyday objects, tractors, bales of bills, become financial instruments.
And that brings us to the consumer and culture roundup, where tariffs keep showing up in unexpected places. Julie Maclow, founder of the luxury whiskey brand Maclow, argued that tariffs on liquor ultimately punish American consumers through higher prices and may even be contributing to younger generations drinking less. Her answer is convenience, a premium, ready-to-serve whiskey cocktail designed to make a traditionally, in her words, snobby category more accessible.
Housing adjacent. A new Zillow report finds that as U.S. rent prices rise, more tenants are relocating to cheaper markets. That's rental demand migration, and it has implications for future home sales, since where renters go, eventual buyers follow.
In tech hardware, the foldable race is heating up. Xiaomi and Huawei launched new foldables ahead of Apple's event, where the company is rumored to unveil its first foldable iPhone. Keyword, rumored. Apple hasn't confirmed anything, but the Chinese giants clearly aren't waiting.
In sports business, NASCAR CEO Steve O'Donnell says the business has good momentum, but he's focused on attracting younger viewers and getting new fans to the track. And he talked about how competition among drivers helps the sport.
In policy, Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey announced major restrictions on data center development, including a requirement that companies procure their own renewable energy supply. Connect that to the Google Blackstone delays we mentioned. The data center buildout is hitting both logistical and now regulatory friction.
In politics, New Hampshire went to the polls in a primary for a key open Senate seat. Incumbent Senator Jan Shaheen, a Democrat, is retiring at the end of her term next year.
And one final item, flagged for what it is. President Trump posted a stream of AI-generated images and a series of sweeping and unverified claims on Truth Social on Sunday, including that he's made hundreds of billions of dollars on stocks for the U.S. Those are unverified claims, not reported facts, so we note them without treating them as market information.
So let's pull it together. The session's through line. Geopolitical escalation transmitting into real prices. Brent near 100, stocks lower, yields up. Pharma gave us the day's clearest single stock moves. Novartis down 10%, Boston Scientific guiding lower, AstraZeneca up on trial wins. And the unknowns to hold in mind. The scope of Bessensie's buyback program, the durability of the Jazan refinery risk, and whether bond market volatility proves to be correction or crisis.
That's the briefing. We've covered the closing tape, the catalysts, and what to watch, calmly and with the facts as reported. Thanks for listening.
We'll be back with the next close. Take care.